certainly he is the king, Drew Brees, of New Orleans. This guy is the king of Roanoke. Do you realize the guy joining us right now on the Loud Security Systems newsmaker line is the Roanoke Times person of the decade? He's a man that needs no introduction. He's Marty Smith here on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Marty, thanks for the time.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Do your loyal listeners know what the Roanoke Times is?
Well, they would probably assume it's a paper in Roanoke, Virginia.
Yes. A newspaper.
Guys, first of all, I will say thank you for having me. It's hard for me to wrap my hands around the fact that that the Roanoke Times named me that, gave me that distinction. And I was so floored. I got a call from an old friend named Mark Berman, who's one of their great reporters. And I was at the Peach Bowl at the time. And it was a couple of days before the game, right after Christmas. And he said, hey, man, I'd love to just chat with you. You've had quite a decade of growth and experience and with your book now and all those things. And I'm like, sure. So I'm just rapping with the guy, you know, just chatting with him. And then the next thing you know, during the Peach Bowl, my phone just starts I'm standing on the LSU sideline. I'm just buzzing in my pocket. I'm like, Lord, what is going on? And it's all my buddies from home, because I guess they put the piece online. And then it started going around to all my high school friends, all my college buddies. And I got tears in my eyes. I just couldn't believe it, because when I was a kid, I read that newspaper every day. I studied the Agate page every day to know who was doing what in high school sports. That included when I was playing them. And then I went and wrote for them in college. I covered high school sports and the New River Valley Speedway, late model track, NASCAR track, for them in college. And so for them to consider me even remotely on that list, much less atop it, was humbling beyond words. And you know what? Let me tell you guys something really super cool. So on that note, I come back from the national championship, and I immediately start studying college basketball. And my wife always leaves the packages up for me on my desk in my home office. And I open up this manila folder. Within that manila folder is a copy of that Roanoke Times page. And there is a letter in it that says this. It's actually sitting right beside me. Marty, you make all of Southwest Virginia proud. I really enjoyed this article as well as your book. I must tell you, I'm a little disappointed you moved me all the way down to number 11. I've got some work to do. Thank you and congratulations, Frank Beamer. How about that?
Well, look, at the end of the day, it's really interesting, because I know your relationship with Frank in that part of the country. I will tell you, I was on the sideline for that Peach Bowl game as well, and I saw you crying. I thought it was about Oklahoma's performance. I just said, this guy wants to get out of here as much as everybody else. My God.
What a game, will this game end? What about Joe Burrow in that thing?
Yeah, well, I don't want to take away real quick from the Roanoke thing, but it is interesting when you get an actual letter or an actual note from somebody. I'm sorry, text is incredible, I guess. Email's kind of nice. But when you actually get something either handwritten or signed by somebody, how different is that than actually getting something electronically?
It's one of the things that I preach. Because of Never Settle, my book, I do a lot of public speaking now. And I do a lot of public speaking throughout this entire fall, going around to all the SEC universities that we're so blessed to visit every single weekend. I spoke to fraternity groups, a couple hundred young men, every Thursday evening. And invariably, one of them asks what advice I might give them as they begin their preparation for a professional career. And one of the things that I tell them is write handwritten thank you letters. That 2 minutes of your life offers you forever in a man's soul. Because in today's world of 280-character blind keyboard cowboy society in which we live, if someone does something kind for you, or if someone does something that has an impact on your career, or they take the time to champion you as a person, or embrace you as a human being. Pull out a pen, sit down, tell them what that meant to you, because it is so rare anymore. And I write, I can't even count how many of them I write each year. And it matters. I was just walking across the field before the national championship. I was in Baton Rouge for 3 days. And I was running across the field because I was late from something to Coach Orgeron's media address. And he grabbed me and he was like, "Hey, I got that letter. I appreciate what you said. I appreciate that you took the time to say it." And that's the kind of thing that people remember.
I'll also tell you that when you mention it, your buddies are the ones, the guys you grew up with, are the ones congratulating you. The other part of that that's great, they are the first ones to bust your balls or to tell you, "Hey, remember where you're from." If you don't have that group of people in your life as well, it's really easy to sort of, I'm assuming in the world that you're hovering in, to get away from the roots.
I'll tell you what. This is what I told Joe Burrow the first time I saw him after the Heisman. So I met Joe when he was a freshman at Ohio State. I've known him a while. And to see his explosion is just so fun because I love his parents. They're wonderful. And I saw him on December the 22nd when LSU arrived in Atlanta for the Peach Bowl. And he walked over and said hello. And I gave him a hug and I said, "Listen, I just want to say this to you and I want you to listen to me. One of the most redeeming attributes and traits that Americans love is don't forget your roots. And you've taken 90 seconds of the largest spotlight of your life during the Heisman Trophy acceptance speech to champion your home and to educate the globe about what's going on at home. And the aftermath of that and the impact of that says so much about you. And I am grateful that you did that. And I'm from Appalachia, man. I'm nowhere close to Ohio. But that impacted every single person that heard it. And I take that very seriously, too. I am so proud to be where I'm from and to represent where I'm from every day.
Have you had a moment where either you caught yourself or one of your buddies? Because we joked the last time you were on. The reason you're on again is we really enjoyed it. I made a comment about, "Hey, man, skinny guy suits. Look at it. Those suits aren't cheap." When you do it for
hey,
work.
You're right.
Yeah. But have you caught yourself or has one of your buddies or somebody in your family ever had to pull you aside and say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, little bit too much right there"?
No. And, you know, I don't think about that on a daily basis. I don't think about what they may think or whatnot. I know this. My friends back home are the first ones to bust my chops, and you're right, they should be. I'd be pissed if they weren't. But they also know that I carry them with me every day. And again, you know, back to the book. The response to the picture and the photograph that I painted of my home area in those pages meant a lot to the people there. And it's the way that I see it. I feel so blessed to have grown up in a nowhere town, in a MapDOT town, where, you know, you go to church on Wednesday evening and you go to church on Sunday morning. And your mama's the choir director, and high school football is religion. And we all were farm boys throwing hay bales on hot summer days and putting out salt licks on frigid winter mornings. That's just who we are. And I haven't forgotten that, and I love that. And it's a lot more beautiful now in the film strip of nostalgia than it was when I was having to do it. But I'm damn proud of that, man, and I always will be proud of that.
Marty Smith is with us. He referenced the book, Never Settle, Sports, Family, and the American Soul. He joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. The excerpt that I was able to read is the conversation as you rode in the car with Nick Saban that you had. And a lot of guys get nervous before they play in a game, before they coach in a game. The night before you're doing that, you're going to be you and Nick Saban, that's it, in a car. Your one shot, as you said. How nervous are you going into that?
I don't know that I was nervous, and I'll tell you why. I felt very prepared. I had voraciously prepared for those three questions. I mean, I knew it was going to end up being 3 to 4 questions because I had 5 minutes total. And so I knew that they were – I felt like they were well-studied. I felt like they showed that I cared enough to prepare. And then but you guys know, you guys interview people for a living. You can be the greatest interviewer on earth. You can be the most well-prepared with the greatest depth and candor. But if the interviewee doesn't play ball, it's all for naught. And fortunately, Coach did that day. And I don't know that I was nervous, but as I wrote in the book, I did feel like that high school kid who's meeting his new girlfriend's daddy for the first time, because you feel like you're intruding on their territory and you know they don't want you around. And but it was a very special day because, as you know, as I wrote there, it kind of created a bond between us that was a lot deeper than just reporter coach.
Do you know what's interesting, Marty? There's a fine line. I've always said if I'm not excited about the things I'm supposed to be excited about, it is time to get out. And it's not a nervousness because, again, if you're prepared, but there's a little bit of anxiousness. You want to make sure you get it right. I'll ask you in the interview thing because you do a podcast. I've never believed in writing down questions. I don't know how you do this, because I've always thought that that just means you're doing the interview in your head before it actually gets done, and you're going to leave the best stuff on the floor because you're not listening.
I love
the idea, and you know it. We know it on this show. And again, I'm going to tell you, when we had you on the first time, we were laughing. I don't know how this is going to go. We said, this guy, he's a really good radio guest. One of the things that I think you hear, it's nicer when you're in person, but when you hear a guy either sit back in the chair because he's relaxed knowing this is going to be good, or they move a little closer into the phone or the microphone because this is going to be good. You can hear it. I mean, you could feel it when you have enough of these conversations.
So back to the preparation process, I agree with you. Here's kind of how I try to operate myself. I study, and throughout that study, I create a list. I do create a written or whatever, email, text, notes list of questions that arise in my mind. I then take that and pare it down to about 10 or 12. And then I study those 10 or 12 so that they're in my mind. But then before the interview starts, I crumple it up and throw it away. I don't want anything in my hands or on my lap because I want to ensure that I'm listening to what's said. And that is a learned skill. That was not always my philosophy because of insecurity. And once I became a little more seasoned and realized that was the best way, for me anyway, it's not everybody's best way, but for me it is, the interviews kind of did go to another level because there is that exchange of energy between you and the interviewee that he knows you, he or she know, you better be listening, and you're not looking at questions in your lap. And so that is what works for me. That might not be everybody's philosophy, but that's what I've kind of honed a little bit.
And you talked about being loyal to who you are, staying true to who you are. And I read it someplace where you said, look, people have come up to me, the LSU fans, for instance. You were told no one's going to make it in this business because you talk like that. I'm sure, Domino, you've heard the same thing. But yet here you are. And that's got to be inspiring, knowing you're an inspiration for that reason.
That's always very humbling. And it's throughout the South. Young reporters or aspiring reporters who are students at the moment. And certainly, I just had the Kentucky-Georgia game. What is today?
Today would be Thursday, yeah. Yes, sir.
Sorry, boys, I can't keep it straight.
When you're on the road like you, again, the days get mixed up, I understand.
Tuesday evening, I had the Kentucky-Georgia game, and a gentleman walked up to me. He was probably in his mid-70s. And folks from the South appreciate seeing and hearing somebody that's relatable. And I think that's actually universal. No matter who you are, it's always engaging when you see someone who sounds like you or looks like you or is from where you're from. It means so much to me when people say that. And I will tell every one of those aspiring students, that is a farce. You can be Southern and articulate at the same time. And I know that that's still an obstacle that so many aspiring journalists and broadcasters face. But I am very blessed that I never did face that. ESPN's not once ever asked me to change. And that's what I tell those young people. Do you, because the most important attribute is authenticity. And the best ability is availability. So stay after it. Be passionate. I feel like, you know, we control kindness, effort, and passion every day. We don't control a whole lot in this world, but we can be nice and we can give it every last ounce of everything we got, and we can do it with an undeniable positive energy.
Marty,
all of us can.
Can I just, as we finish up, I don't know if you've ever done this, or because you talked about crumpling up the piece of paper to make sure it's out of sight, out of mind. Have you ever consciously, physically picked up a pen? I did it in 97. These are the 100 people I'd like to speak to. And I'm not kidding. I spent 6 weeks trying to figure out. And I went for it, man. John Glenn, former president of the United States. Like, I went for it. Have you ever really said, maybe it's not even going to air anyplace. Maybe it's going to be for your own benefit. Maybe it's so good that somebody wants it and they didn't think they were going to want it because of the name attached to it. Do you have that list, or do you think you'll ever sit down and go, and it's not an ego thing. It's just that these are the people that I think are interesting enough to go spend time with.
I mean, there are a few. I don't have 100, certainly. I've not sat down and really drilled down that deeply to people that intrigue me. But I will tell you, there are many that with whom I would love that opportunity. And that's not just sporting figures, to your point. It's certainly former presidents. There are so many recording artists and musicians that have so deeply impacted and shaped my life. I had the opportunity a couple months back to interview Travis Tritt at the Ryman, and it was just like I was walking on clouds, because that dude's one of the soundtrack members of my youth. And the way that he and his peers in that era helped shape me. So absolutely, there's a lot of folks that I would love to have that opportunity. What was the one – all right, I'm flipping the script now. What was the one person that was on that list for you that you had the opportunity to fulfill that, and what was that like?
Jim Lovell and John Glenn, those were the two outside – Sir Edmund Hillary was another guy outside of the world of sports that had happened. President Carter, I got pretty lucky. There are certain people that passed away before I could get them, which is the one that really pains me. There are certain ones that sort of stick in my gut that I didn't do it in time. There are a couple of business leaders. Yeah, I kind of got lucky. I think John Glenn might have been the most interesting, because my dad was a big NASA guy. Like, that whole idea of strapping a rocket to your ass and having somebody light a fuse, not knowing what was going to happen. They're the cowboys. They're the 20th century cowboys.
Different level of badass.
No doubt. Chuck Yeager. We had Chuck Yeager on the show as well. He was, Chuck Yeager is probably one, if not 1A, was the other guy that we had the opportunity to have on.
I don't know that you got lucky. I'm not sure I believe in luck. I think in a lot of cases, our approaches define that luck and circumvent it in a lot of ways, because I feel like we make our own path. And so I'm not sure that you got lucky. I think you probably just worked hard and treated people well and were diligent and dogged in chasing those interviews. That's just my philosophy, though, I think.
Well, Marty, you and my partner, Chris Domino, are also kindred spirits for a number of different reasons. You've got your Marty Smith's America, the podcast. Chris Domino has something called Hardball, the podcast, where he talks to baseball players, legendary baseball players, some no longer with us, that he's recorded in the past. So you guys can get together and discuss that one day as well.
Who's the most interesting?
Ted Williams was.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Marty, I was told by it was going to become his future daughter-in-law. It was a few months. It was the last one he did. It was the last recorded thing he ever did. She said, you might get 3, 4, 5 minutes, depends how he does. And it was 27 to 28 minutes. And my line about being nervous was, I was more sure the night before my wedding that it was going to go well, as opposed to after a year and a half of trying to set it up the night before that. Because when you hear, depends how the day goes, 3, 4, 5 minutes, and it turns into 27 or 28, it's just... Yeah, it's phenomenal.
What an amazing... That must have just been...
It was crazy.
Surreal.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was pretty crazy, because not only the baseball background, but the military background. When a man says,
right,
when he's done all he's done in a baseball uniform, and he says, oh, by the way, the Marine uniform was much more important. And the other one was, he talked about what type of father he thought he was, and it wasn't very good. And for a guy to say later on in his life, I don't think I was very – I wasn't as good a father as I could have been. Like, those are the moments where you go, well, it's not about hitting 400. It's about finding out maybe somebody's going to say something they haven't said publicly very often.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I know you probably got to hop, but if I need to shut up, just tell me. I did this interview for Veterans Day this year. It's an interview that I had wanted to do for 5 or 6 years with a guy named Mr. Charles Surrey, who was an All-American for Ohio State on their national championship team in 1940. And he gets done playing ball, and the next thing you know, he's in World War II, Battle of the Bulge. And Mr. Surrey, when he was 20, was in a firefight, and his commander turned and said, "Who among you will deliver this message?" They had lost comms in this firefight. Frigid, frigid, frigid Black Forest firefight. And he said, "Aye, sir." And he started running across that field. And in the middle of that sprint across that field, it dawned on him, holy smokes, these dudes are trying to kill me. And he did his duty, and he won the Bronze Star for heroism. And I went to Columbus, Ohio, back during the fall, and I got to sit with Mr. Surrey, who's now 97 years old. And oh, by the way, when he got out of the war, he happens to be known as the godfather of digital animation, too. You want to talk about feeling small? You want to talk about feeling insignificant? The Greatest Generation, it's just having the blessing of sitting with them is beyond description. And for Mr. Surrey to share his amazing life with me, and with tears in his eyes talking about that war all these years later, something that he suppressed and compartmentalized for decades, was quite an experience.
Well, Marty, listen, we always appreciate the time. Congratulations on being the sports person of the decade. Good luck with the book, podcast, and hopefully we can catch up again real soon.
Appreciate it, gentlemen. I always appreciate you having me, and I hope you guys have an amazing week and weekend.
You do the same. Marty Smith joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. I know now what it feels like to be a little kid sitting at the kid's table while two adults talk in the room, because that's how I feel right now.
Yeah, whoa, no way!
Yeah, he's in shape. He wears nice suits. Yeah. We have a few.
You've taught the Ted Williams. He's taught the war heroes. I'm going to go do legs later on at LA Fitness.